PR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Today's programming is made possible in part by Ratio Severance Reed Architects, Designers, and Planners, dedicated to distinctive projects for community, life sciences, and workplace clients, on the web at www.ratioarchitects.com.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL AM 580. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly show about computers, we take up this topic each month on the third Thursday of the month. And I invite your questions today about computers for Peter Kimball of the University of Illinois. Peter is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium, FAST 3. If you've got a question, a comment, or a concern about computers, give us a call. If you're listening in the Champaign-Urbana area, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, if it would be a long-distance call, use the toll-free number 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Peter, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thank you. Good to see you. Happy New Year. Last time I was here, it wasn't nearly as cold as it is now.
No?
It was late last fall.
Wow, has it been that long?
Yes.
Wow. Well, welcome back.
Thanksgiving-ish.
Wow.
And here it's almost groundhog-ish.
We've got a call in already, a listener waiting to talk with you. So let's go and talk with our first listener this afternoon, calling in on line one. Good afternoon.
Hello. I have a question. It has to do with viruses and so forth.
Uh-huh.
I have a tablet PC, which I, the only time I ever hook it to the internet is to, if I want to download some software. I do not read email on it or anything, or and so forth, because I do that on a different computer. And I have never put any virus software on it, and part of the reason, you know, it seems like you constantly have to update it and so forth and so on, and I didn't really want to get into that with this tablet. Am I quite vulnerable, or is it as long as you don't get on the internet with it or read email, then are you fairly safe?
Well, if you're connected, the tablet PC is still a PC, and if you're connected to the internet, you are certainly going to be vulnerable, although not nearly as much as if you're receiving a lot of email and opening it, and not quite as vulnerable to the same range of things as you would be. There are antivirus software available for the tablet PC. There's a website. It's not really commercial, although it has a number of commercial links you might want to look at, and it's simply thetabletpc.net, which is a pretty good information center about tablet PCs.
Okay.
The other thing you could do, now when you connect to the internet, are you doing this, do you have a dial-up connection, or do you have a always-on internet connection that you just plug it into, like a cable modem or a DSL line, or how are you actually?
No, it's a dial-up that I just hook up for the particular software that I want to pick up, and then I just connect it right away.
Yeah, you're relatively safe, but I would still look into, you're not a completely safe anytime you're connected, so I would still look into the antivirus software, and yes, updates are necessary, but that could just be one of the things you do every time or every other time you connect to the internet. But take a look at that, the tablet PC site. You could also do various searches just in Google, on your regular machine, and you'll find a number of resources. But probably nothing will happen, but if it does, you'll really be glad if you've put in some antivirus software.
Okay. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Thanks for the call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, anywhere else, toll-free 800-222-9455. Now, I understand once you have a virus protection program on the computer, it's possible to set your system so that it automatically updates every time you sign on, when you log on. Now, if you're currently doing it by going to the program and, you know, updating it kind of manually, so to speak, how do you change it around so it's automatic? Because this guy says, you know, it's kind of a hassle to keep updating
the damn
thing.
Well, it can be. Of course, in his case, he's not running regular antivirus software, but all of the major antivirus companies, and that would be Symantec that makes Norton Antivirus and McAfee and all the rest, if you simply launch the antivirus program itself, you'll have a number of options such as I'd like to manually scan all of my files. I would like to turn on or off virus protection if there was some reason that you needed to do that very briefly. And one of the options is going to be to automatically check for updates. So it will be one of the options in one of the drop-down menus. And what it does, it doesn't always update because there are not going to be updates every time you connect to the Internet, quite possibly. But every time that you connect to the Internet, it will check. And that check can be a matter of just a few seconds. And if it finds that there's nothing to update, of course, there's nothing spent in terms of your download time. If it does find that there's something to download, if there is an update, then you really do want it because that means there are threats out there that your current software is not protecting you from.
Yeah, that download goes pretty quickly, though.
It usually does.
Yeah. Let's talk with another listener. Caller on line one. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
I have a question about iPods. I bought one of the earlier versions that existed before they had iTunes for IBM.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm using Music Match. But because it's an old iPod, I wanted to get that battery replaced and eventually switch over to iTunes on a new computer. And I'm wondering then, is there some way I can transfer my music files from Music Match over to iTunes on a new computer?
I imagine there is. Boy, that is a question I have not had, to deal with before. So you're currently using Music Match.
Right.
And
I want to use my new computer with iTunes because it has a lot of options.
Sure.
Music Match doesn't offer.
You were in there at the early time, and, of course, that's kind of the bleeding edge at that point. And so if you actually have Music Match, there is, I'm just looking at this now, there is going to be a way to transfer that. Your iPod has a probably a USB connection, a cable that you can connect.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Music Match software, I would guess, on the computer, if you install it, you could actually get Music Match and install it on the computer and use it to bring in the files from the iPod. This is my guess. This is
okay.
Where I would go first.
Mm-hmm.
Once it's connected, you're obviously not going to be able to do it from the level of the iPod, but once the iPod is connected, software on the computer can read that. And I would go to the Music Match website and check that possibility out, but you may need to install the Music Match jukebox on your machine, and it is relatively inexpensive too, I believe.
Okay, great. Thanks for your help.
Appreciate
it. Bye.
Bye bye. Next, we talk with a listener on line four, our toll free line. Hello.
Hi. I've got a problem that I keep getting disconnected from the internet, and I keep getting these messages that it's not making the connection. And I go to the dial-up new connections, and I can get through. But I'm wondering, what am I doing wrong that it doesn't become permanent again?
So it's a dial-up connection.
Yeah.
Are you using what sort of – are we talking about a Windows machine?
Windows, yes.
And
a compact computer.
Okay. And when you're connecting is it Windows XP or Windows 2000? Or
98, 95.
Do you happen to know whether it's 98 or 95?
Both.
Okay, so you can from either two different machines or from one machine you can
boot
it.
From one machine, sir.
Okay, so you can boot into either Windows 95 or into Windows 98.
You're asking me?
You're
telling me that that's one instruction.
Yes. What I'm actually trying to determine, if you're actually running Windows 95, you could conceivably have both Windows 95 and Windows 98 installed on the machine, although that would be unlikely.
Uh-huh.
If you are actually running Windows 95, there's not a lot of advice I could give you other than move on and use Windows 98 or Windows 98 second edition exclusively. Windows 95 has a lot of problems, and it's no longer even supported by Microsoft and hasn't been for some time. So don't even try to do it through Windows 95. If you do have your machine set up so you can boot into Windows 98, then it would be... The ideal situation would be to actually update, but if this is an older machine, it may not have the capacity of being able to support Windows, a more recent version of Windows, which are much more stable and are able to handle connections much better.
That would be the XP?
That would be XP, and in your case, XP Home would work fine.
XP Home?
Yes. Windows XP comes in two flavors. It's called XP Home and XP Professional. But unless you're in a business networked environment, most people wouldn't really need to have XP Pro, and it's a bit more expensive.
Could I ask two more short questions, please?
Sure.
What would XP Home cost?
XP Home, do you have a are you affiliated with a school, or do you have a child or someone who is a student?
No.
reason I ask is the academic price will be significantly less. If I just do a real quick search here, I'm going to guess that XP Home is going to cost the better part of $100.
Okay. And how about is installing it that much of a problem?
No. Installing it is fairly easy, but here is the problem you might have. In order to install Windows XP, if your machine is an older machine, it doesn't have very much memory, it doesn't have very much hard drive space, you may have a difficult problem there. You may need to have additional hard drive space. You may need to have additional memory. It almost becomes, especially if the machine is more than 5 or 6 years old, it almost, I hate to keep telling you to spend money, but it almost would help to buy a $500 brand new machine because you could use your existing monitor and such with it.
What would you recommend?
Oh, there are any number of machines. They range from, and you can look a lot of these things up on the web, from e-machines to Dell. You could get a view of things if you go to one of the big box stores like Best Buy or Circuit City and just see the sorts of things they have. You don't necessarily need to then... purchase them at that location, but you can see the range of machines, and some of them literally with rebates and the rest, if you're on a bare-bones budget, can be had for, and you're not needing to get a monitor, for as little as $300 or $400.
For the whole thing, you mean?
Well, without a monitor.
But if you keep the monitor. Well.
Yes. Although you can sometimes get deals with monitors for just an extra $100 or $200, so you're up around $500, and it was going to solve many of your problems that would be just too expensive to solve piecemeal, such as increasing your hard drive space, increasing your memory, updating the operating system. A lot of those prices, because Microsoft bundles the OS, the operating system, with it, you wouldn't have to pay extra for the Windows XP.
You think it's a pretty going down a block street to even continue to try to use Windows 98 on it?
Well, Windows 98 is right at the borderline. If you've got Windows 98 second edition, or sometimes referred to as Windows 98 SE, you're in better shape than with just plain Windows 98, but less and less of the software support and the various tools you might want to use are even going to run on Windows 98. So the time is coming, if not now, certainly within 2 or 3 years, that you're likely to decide you really have to move. And if you're having difficulty now, the simplest solution, if you're going to be doing more things with your computer eventually and wanting to, you know, see some of the other things that are going to appear on the web, would be to update and upgrade.
But do you have any particular brand that you would favor for general value and reliability?
I can tell you that among many of the reviews, if you look at magazines like PC Magazine and even Consumer Reports, some of the companies that get fairly high marks include Dell, include Hewlett-Packard, which of course took over Compaq, and there are others as well, but certainly
those three would be among the most reliable or
that's what a number of people have found.
I see.
But
okay.
There are a number of other good companies as well. Acer is making some good machines, especially marketed in the Far East.
And you think $300 to $400 without the monitor is pretty much a ballpark figure?
Bare bones system, but it'll certainly perform a lot better than what you've currently got.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Quite welcome.
Good luck. Next, we talk with a listener in Ashmore on line 2. Hi.
Hi, how are you, Dave?
Fine, how are you?
Good. I have a question about, I'm getting a lot of pornography on my computer, and I've got a blocker, but it seems stopping. And I happen to read in one of those, journal magazine, it's called Bottom Line, and it says if you put your email, like they'll say, you can block it, put your email in here, they get more of it, and I think that's probably true. I've been saying I don't want it sent to me, and I think I'm getting more.
Yes. In fact, that's exactly what is likely happening. One of the first rules of the road in terms of this unwanted email, the spam, whether it's dealing with pornography, whether it's dealing with trying to sell you prescription drugs, whatever it may be, is you should never, ever respond saying, take me off your list. The reason is that they generate hundreds of thousands of these spam emails to a random selection of addresses, many of which may not actually go through and have a real address at the end. But if anybody responds, what you're telling them is, oh, there is somebody at this address,
yep,
and you immediately
right.
move to the A list,
yeah,
and you get
together.
A lot more. So they are, you know, evil, mean, and nasty, and one of the reasons is that not only are they sending you stuff you don't want, but they are trying to trick you into saying, I'm really here, don't send me more, which they interpret as saying, oh, boy, we've got a live one.
Yeah. I have McAfee on the spam, and I have spam on my Yahoo, and I have the security net, the security pack that Cafferty has.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, that would surely do it, but it hasn't.
Now, is your email address that at which you're receiving email, is it a Yahoo address?
Yes.
Okay. So to read your email, you actually log into Yahoo and go into
right.
Yahoo Mail.
Right.
Yahoo, and I'm assuming you've turned on Yahoo's Spam Guard.
Yep.
And that will grab a lot of it. And anything that is not spam, what you don't do is you don't respond to it, but you can certainly click on the little box in the Yahoo on the web page. And once you've selected, you know, if you get 6 or 7 or 10 or 15 of these junk mail messages, click on the little box next to them. And then at the top of the menu bar, you'll see a button on the Yahoo website that says spam, because that helps the Yahoo determine what's spam and what isn't.
I think I remember seeing that.
And then you can just dump that. I don't use it often, but I do have a Yahoo email address that I use when I don't want to give out my real, true university email address.
I've done that too.
Well, that's the other thing. If you've got a list of, you know, a half a dozen, a dozen, maybe two or three dozen people, and maybe a mailing list, strongly consider starting fresh. Create a new Yahoo account. Just let the other one disappear, and just be very careful. Now, they're probably going to discover this new address because they keep trying, but it will buy you a respite of, a few months anyway, probably.
Yeah, well, I have spyware in there, too. You know, it tells me if anything comes in.
Right, which is good. I was going to ask about that next, because if you've downloaded anything, sometimes that spyware and adware programs can actually generate a lot of this, although they generally don't do it by sending you email. They do it by popping up the little boxes on your screen.
The other thing that's interesting is I have XP home, and it's also interesting that the Yahoo now has changed, and at the top I used to have a little back button or a forward button, you know, a little arrow, and it's not on there anymore.
In your actual browser?
Yeah, in my Yahoo browser.
I haven't seen, now the Yahoo browser is, I believe, based on still Internet Explorer, although I'm not really sure.
Yeah, it is Explorer.
And so up there by where you used to have the file menu and the edit menu and all of that, you used to have, what you can do is on your view menu, drop down where it says toolbars.
Yeah, I've got that.
And then under toolbars, what you can do is just choose, make sure there's a check mark next to standard buttons.
Okay.
Because that's what turns on and off that little button.
That's what turns off. I think it got... You know, sometimes you do something you don't know that you did. And I think
sometimes programs you download will do that for you or to you.
Yeah. The last question I have is, I have a compact laptop, brand new machine, and I've already contacted them once about this. But, you know, I can either use a touchpad or I can use a mouse.
Yes.
Of course, I'm used to using the mouse, so I take it with me because I have to use a touchpad if I'm in some place where I don't have a plug-in and I'm just using it alone.
Uh-huh.
Can't put a pad down. And the thing I notice, once in a while, I'm moving this mouse around, and all at once, it charges over to one side and hits it, and I lose everything. I mean, it doesn't happen all the time, but something, or and I've tried it without the mouse, and I get the same thing in the touchpad, and I've tried, it's a compact, so I've been working with Hewlett Packard trying to get this out, and I may have to send it back for servers. It doesn't happen very often, but when it does, you know, if I'm, whatever I'm into, I lose it.
Well, one thing you can try to do if it's there could well be a hardware problem, but one thing that you can also do is you can go into the control panel, the Windows Start Menu Control Panel, Settings, then Control Panel, and then Choose Mouse, and then under the Motion, you can control how fast the mouse pointer moves.
I forgot about that.
And sometimes if you have that set more towards the fast side, all of a sudden it can jump over to one side or the other, so you can
That's
slow that down.
That's a good idea. I hadn't even thought of that. I'll try that. Well, listen, you have been more than helpful.
Good.
I thank you today.
Good luck.
Bye.
Next, we talk with a listener in Normal on line one. Hi.
Hello. I've been trying to speed up my typing skills, and I've heard about the keyboard called Dvorak. Are you familiar with it?
Yes.
And then I went on trying to search for it or search information about it. And what the website that I went on said that you can go into your control panel and then keyboard, and then it'll come up Dvorak, and you can change it so that your keyboard now becomes compatible for Dvorak.
Dvorak, yes.
So is that correct?
I think it's pronounced Dvorak, but
okay.
Who knows?
Okay.
But yes, you certainly can do that. Of course, keep in mind if you've done that you know, you need to be able to get back to someplace because that could drive somebody else just a little bit nuts. But the I'm just looking to see if I can find this.
I mean, is there anything else I have to have?
No, you can certainly. I'm looking to see if there is. I'm not finding the location on this particular machine, but that's really all that's necessary. Of course, that means, obviously, that the keys that you see, you're going to see the QWERTY, Q-W-E-R-T-Y, and that's not going to be the keys. The other thing I'll point out is that if you look at some of the sites that discuss using the Dvorak keyboard along with the standard, what's called the QWERTY keyboard, there's not a great deal, unless you really are trying to squeeze the last seconds of speed out. For most people, there's not a great deal of difference between being a competent typist on a QWERTY keyboard and on the Dvorak keyboard, because most people don't type fast enough to get their fingers tangled up even on the QWERTY keyboard. So just additional practice might help. I'm just pointing that out as one possibility.
Okay, but that's all you have to do.
Because the computer can control exactly. If you press the letter Q on the keyboard, it's the computer that decides whether that's the letter Q or whether it's one of the letters, whatever it would be up in that position on the Dvorak keyboard.
Okay.
So it can all be done with software. They do sell keyboards that are laid out and actually have labels. They also sell little keycaps that can snap over your existing keys so that you can essentially reassign them. What you don't want to try to do, because there's too many potential problems, is don't try prying off the key tops on your existing keyboard and putting them elsewhere, because you could damage your keyboard if you don't do that precisely right. But they do have little snap over things, or you could just put little bits of not-too-sticky tape temporarily. Of course, the ideal is you never should look at the keyboard anyway when you're typing, but when you're first learning a new system, a lot of people do.
Uh-huh. Well, but you said there were some websites that
I would
look
yes.
at.
I would simply do a Google search and just type in the Dvorak, D-V-O-R-A-K. I just did a search for Dvorak keyboard. And so there are all sorts of various sites there. I haven't really filtered through them, but a number of them are educational sites, .edu sites. Here's one at MIT. So even on the first page in the Google search. Of course, it came up with 161,000 hits for the four-jet keyboard, so you probably won't get through more than the first couple of pages. But that's where I would go to start.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Uh-huh. Have fun with that.
Next, we talk with a listener in Eureka on line 3. Good afternoon.
Yes, I have a couple of questions.
Sure.
We had an old computer that had Windows 95 on. We just got a new one. And on WordPerfect, where you can add, you know, little figures, the old one seemed to have nicer figures than the new WordPerfect. Is there any way that you can
Now, by change? Figures, you mean little characters?
Yeah, little characters and so forth. Is there any way that you can add some of those?
Yes. Essentially, what you're looking at, I presume, is you're looking at specialized fonts. For example, as most people are aware, there are fonts that look like the typewriter, the Courier font, and there's the Times Roman and the Century School Book. There are dozens, if not hundreds, that are typically installed on a lot of machines. And some of those fonts are decorative fonts, things like web wingdings and webdings and dingbats and such. You may or may not have those fonts installed, but I would do a search in Google, for example, for dingbats, which is a lot of little characters that you type. You simply search that.
It wasn't so much that, but, you know, there's like little animals and things like that, you know, you can.
So are these not so much typable characters, but actual little images?
Yeah, that you bring up and, you know, you can place them on your paper.
Okay. I was going in the wrong direction then. So things like clip art.
Yes.
If it's, WordPerfect clip art and old machines. I'm not sure.
No, this is on a new machine.
Okay. Well, no, I was trying to think of what the clip art format was on the older machines when you were using WordPerfect on the older machine. There is, on the newer machine, it may not be fully installed, a set of clip art. You can also insert on modern word processing programs, including WordPerfect, if you're using that, you can insert actual images, GIF files and JPEGs and things that come either from a digital camera or from the web. You can search for those. There is also, if you go to the... Now, are you using WordPerfect on the new machine?
Yes.
Okay. So this is an area that I'm not using WordPerfect quite as much. But if we go to WordPerfect.com and find there, do a search for clip art, you'll probably find a fairly full array of clip art designed for use with WordPerfect. The standard clip art that most people use, of course, comes with Microsoft Office, but that's for Microsoft Word, and I don't believe WordPerfect would necessarily be able to read that. But that's where I would go, to the Corel or the WordPerfect website. WordPerfect is now sold by Corel. And there should be, here someplace, downloads, an option to bring in, I'm not finding it at this point, but there should be a... And you could also do a Google search for WordPerfect clip art.
Okay. And then the other question, on this new one, it has the, you know, the mouse has a scroll button in the middle.
Yes.
And when you scroll down, it seems like sometimes that the scroll button doesn't work.
If it doesn't, one of the things that can happen is you might have the focus of the machine may be paying attention to something else. If the scroll button isn't working, try clicking just any place inside the document window to make sure you haven't accidentally clicked outside that document window.
Okay.
That often will return it to working again. It just thinks there's some place where you can't scroll. So click back inside the document and the scroll button should work.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, good luck. This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580. I'm Celeste Quinn, and this is our monthly program about computers, our monthly discussion about computers. We take up the topic every month on the third Thursday of the month. Peter Kimball is with us this afternoon. He's with the University of Illinois. He is the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the university's technology consortium, FAST 3. Questions, concerns about computers, you can give us a call, talk to Peter, and he'll help you out. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, if it would be a toll call, use the toll-free number, 800-222-9455. Let's talk with another listener, caller in Champaign, line 1. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about... high-speed internet access. I recently retired, and so I'm at home now, and I'm using dial-up, and it's a real slow process.
Yes, it is.
And we live in the country, so we don't have a lot of options, but I wondered if you had any suggestions for getting high-speed internet at a reasonable cost in the country.
Well, you're right. Since you're in the country, you don't have the option, the most two most common options, which are cable and DSL. Although SBC is gradually extending their DSL range, but they haven't moved it out into the country yet. There are, and I should have brought this with me, but I don't quite have it here. There are a number of potential options that you have. If you are relatively close to an area, if I'm trying to think of what the name of this is. PrairieNet, perhaps. There is a company that has established, essentially it's a hybrid. They will send the internet signal to you, so whatever you download, via a radio transmitter that they mount typically on grain silos and various other areas, and as long as you're line of sight from that, which means a few miles away. And then your return information goes by telephone, but that is not nearly as bad because you don't send nearly as much information to the internet, most people don't, as they receive.
Right.
Let me just bring up, see if I can find
that. Is satellite an option?
Satellite is an option, satellite is often also this hybrid. You receive the signal down because it's prohibitively expensive, although it's available, to send the signal back to the satellite. So you receive the information via a satellite link, just like a dish antenna, although it's not the dish company. And then your information, what you're typing, goes back via a phone line.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And okay. So let's see here. I'm looking to see if I can find, Volanet. Is this one of them? I am simply not finding at this point. The short answer, without being real specific, and I will see if I can dig this up a little bit later, is that, yes, you have a number of options, either information coming to you via satellite or via a local transmitter that a company has set up to cover some areas in the country, with your return information going by telephone.
What would some keywords be for a Google search on that?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm looking for. I'm simply going to try. I presume, I don't recall where you're calling from. Is the
rural
Champaign area?
Yeah. Rural Champaign, yeah.
So what I would try doing is doing a search for Champaign and ISP for Internet Service Provider.
Oh, okay.
And there I've already hit, just with Champaign and ISP, about 140,000 pages. But many of those are going to be Champaign ISP. And satellite might be another thing to put in there. Let's see. And so those are the
The look into some of the ones that we get the people advertising the satellite stuff, but I really hadn't looked into it.
Yeah. I'm trying to filter out some of these. I'm finding all sorts of things here, but I'm trying to filter out many of the ones that are purely commercial. But doing a site for Champaign ISP and satellite gave me about 26,000 pages.
Oh.
So I would say coverage map of Illinois broadband wireless ISPs. So that's the direction that I would go.
Okay.
And there are at least a couple of companies. The other thing I would do in Champaign is I'd actually look in the phone book and see what the under Internet Service Providers,
okay.
Because there are two or three companies there that I suspect are going to list themselves.
Okay.
And I've also just been informed that we're going to take the next call we're going to take could help. The listener could help us out here that would be a nice way to go. So let's let our rural Champaign caller hang up and we'll talk with another listener. She can get back to her radio and we'll give her the answer. This is Computers and You on the Afternoon Magazine, a topic we take up on the third Thursday of the month. Well, for some help, let's turn to a listener in Champaign. Line 3, good afternoon.
Hi. The company you're looking for is Prairie iNet.
Okay. That's why I couldn't find it under PrairieNet.
Right. Yeah, PrairieNet, I think, is the community, local
community
network.
Yes, something entirely different.
Right. Prairie iNet. I have their service. I've had their service for several years since they started offering it. And it's actually, it's 801.11b wireless service, wireless both ways from your nearest grain elevator.
And how wide is their coverage? Do you know?
Well, you have to be within 3 or 4 miles of a grain elevator.
Do you
put an antenna up on your roof.
Sure.
They put a semi-directional antenna on your roof. And the service has actually been surprisingly reliable, despite, you know, rain and sleet and snow and everything. But they cover, I think, you know, pretty much the, you know, large parts of the state, and I think they go into Indiana and Ohio and other places, too.
Good. And that web address is simply www.prairieinet.net. So if the previous caller wants to take a look, I'm looking to see if there is a map of coverage, but that would be relatively difficult to do. But if they've got fairly good coverage, now is this then radio both ways? You don't have to use
radio both ways. Okay. It's the exact same system
as Wi-Fi,
your laptop wireless network, except that the antennas are a little bit bigger
and more directional
directional. Yeah, because I guess there's a big omnidirectional antenna on top of your nearest grain elevator, and then semi-directional on your roof, and then there's a parabolic dish that goes from that elevator to the next elevator in line.
Sure.
And it's sort of a
hopscotch,
a grain elevator network.
Yes.
Before it
sounds reaches. A little corny, but it works, I'm sure.
Yeah, yes. it really is a good service. I think it's somewhat more expensive, I think, than, you know, cable modem would be in town, and the price depends on how much bandwidth you pay for.
Yes.
But, you know, it's I think, a good bit cheaper than satellite, and you've got, you know, good bandwidth up and down. You know, if that's a factor.
Yeah.
And you're not tying up the phone line.
Yeah, that sounds like exactly what the caller was looking for, if it's available. And unless they're way out in the distance and can't see any grain elevators, they're probably in good shape. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call. Next, we talk with a listener in Monticello, line 2. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
The problem I have is I have Navigator 6.2. And then when I boot up to the Navigator, I get a screen saying it doesn't activate. They can't find netscape.activate.com, and you have to close that window, and then you have to close another window before you get into Navigator. And I just wonder if you can help me how to get out of those two windows so I don't have to go through all that process.
So this is Netscape Navigator as a browser?
Yeah.
6.2. Okay, and I'm just, let's see, is that the most recent version?
No.
It's
an older version.
Well, you're running on what?
I'm running on XP.
Running Windows XP. One of the things you might want to do is to look into downloading the most recent version. It's possible that there is a file that has, or some settings. Once you've gone past and closed these boxes, does everything run normally?
Yes.
So there are clearly some settings in there. What I would almost be tempted to do would be to download from Netscape. You can go to their archived versions if you don't want to change versions, and download the same version that you have, Netscape 6.2, reinstall it, which should reset all of those various things that it's looking for.
Okay. If I go to the newest version of Netscape, well, I'd be able to save all my emails and everything. I won't have to redo all my email and bookmarks then.
That is the way it is supposed to work. That is almost certainly the way it will work. However, it's always a good idea to make backups of anything that's critical before you go about making changes and updates in software. But yes, Netscape.
You just probably just get the newer version of the.
That would be preferable, unless there was some reason. And if you're running Windows XP, you can certainly handle the most recent version of
right.
Of
the
Netscape.
Only thing that I worry about is losing all my email. You know, because I've done that before, where I've changed over from one Navigator to the other, and I've lost everything, and you have to start from square one. You know,
well, it should indeed. Let's see. The current version, by the way, is 7.2.
Okay.
It certainly should preserve all of that, but I would very definitely make a backup of that, install it into a different – you'll have the option when you install it to install it into a different directory so that you could actually have both Netscape 6.2 and 7.2 running at the same time.
Okay, of course, so should I just make another folder? And
right, and then you would from the Netscape site, of course, if you do that and have it in two different locations, the new Netscape won't be looking at this location where your old email is, but you'll certainly have the new version there. Once you're sure that works, there are then, and I haven't found it yet, but I haven't looked that closely, under the Netscape support, it will tell you which files you need to copy in order to which files contain, for example, your addresses, which files contain your past email, your inbox, and your outbox and such.
Okay.
So that would be one way. You could either back up all of your email and simply replace your old 6.2 Netscape Navigator with 7.2, or if you were a little bit more paranoid and didn't mind doing a little bit more work, download Netscape 7.2 into a different location, make sure that it's working fine, and then manually transfer with instructions that you'd find on the Netscape website your email and address files.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, good luck. Let's talk with another listener. Listener on line 4, I believe, in DeKalb. Hi.
Hello. I'm thinking of replacing my computer, and I don't know much about rewrite drives. I wonder if there are any pros and cons to think about with computers with a single combined drive, CD-ROM, with rewrite. Versus separate drive systems?
Well, almost any new computer you buy these days, is the CD drive is going to be a read-write drive, which simply means not only can you read the CDs, but you can write them as well. That's almost a given.
I'm interested in.
Okay. There is certainly no need to have two separate drives to be able to read and to write successfully. However, many systems do come with two optical drives, which allows you more flexibility. You could, for example, have a CD in one and copy portions of it, read it to the other CD drive. Probably what you're going to want to look at, however, is let's take this just a step further. You will want to almost certainly have, and your machine is likely to come with it, except at the very bottom end, a DVD drive so that it can actually read DVDs. That's not just necessarily or not even the main point is to be able to watch movies, but there's going to start being software distributed on DVDs because they hold so much more information than a CD. And the other good news is that a DVD drive, everyone that I'm aware of, can also read and almost always also record CDs. So a single drive could be not only a DVD reader, but also a CD reader and a CD writer. But if the machine is more than just the bare bottom line machine, having two drives, one DVD drive, which can also do CDs, and another drive that can do CDs, but not the DVDs, would be the handiest thing, I think.
Okay, well, that helps a lot. Thank you very much for the information.
Good.
You're very welcome. Boy, right on time. We've taken care of everyone who called in this afternoon.
That's amazing.
And we're 30 seconds away from wrapping up, so that's great. Well, thanks for coming in and talking with our listeners and helping everybody out this afternoon.
It's always a pleasure.
And we'll see you, let's see, in March.
In March. Be about springtime.
It'll be about St. Patrick's-ish.
That's right. I'll look forward to it.
Very good. Peter Kimball.
I'll wear green.
Peter Kimball has been our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. He's with the University of Illinois. He's the Education Program Coordinator and Lead Faculty Trainer for the University's Technology Consortium, FAST3. And again, this is a topic we take up here on the Afternoon Magazine every month on the third Thursday of the month. We call it Computers and You, so you might want to put it down in your calendar, the third Thursday of the month. 10 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. Settlement prices should be in from the Chicago Board of Trade. Let's go to Dave Dickey.
Thank you very much, Celeste, and good afternoon, everyone. If there's not already too much wheat in the world market for purchase, Well, there could be even more now. The European Union today says it's going to revive wheat export subsidies, a move that's likely going to be welcomed by the European Union exporters, but could also spark some trade tensions within the United States, where the Bush administration had tried hard to put an end to such subsidies. That had some impact today on the Chicago Board of Trade in the wheat pit, where we saw the futures contracts down anywhere from 3.75 to 4.25 points. Let's look at the particulars. March, a high on the day of 299, a low of 293.5, settling 294.75, down 4.25. May, a high of 306.25, a low of $3.5, settling 302.25, down 4. July, a high of 313, a low of 308, settling 308.25, down 4.25. September, a high of 318, a low of 314, settling on the low, down 4. December wheat, a high of 327, a low of 322.5, settling 323.5, down 3.75. For the second straight day, we're seeing some gains in the corn and soybean pits. March, corn, a high on the day of 198.25, a low of 196, settling 197.75 up 1. May, a high of 205.25, a low of 203, settling 204.75 up 3/4. July, a high of 212.25, a low of 210, settling 210.5 up a half. September, a high of 219.5, a low of 217.75, settling 219 up 1. December, a high of 229, a low of 227.25, settling 228.5 up 1.25. In March, a high of 236.25, a low of 235, settling 236 up 1.25. March oats, a high on the day of 171, a low of 167.75, settling 170 down a half. May, a high of 158, a low of 154, settling 156 down 1.5. March soybeans, a high of 524.25, a low of 515.5, settling 523.25, up 5.5. Now, March has a premium to the May contract. May, a high on the day of 522, a low of 516.75, settling 521 up 2.25. July beans, a high of 527, a low of 521.5, settling 526 up 1.5. August, 529.5, a low of 525, settling 528.5 up 1.5. September, a high of 530.5, a low of 527.5, settling 529.5 up 1. November, 540.5, a low of 535, settling 537.75 down a half. And January, 544, a low of 542, settling 544, unchanged on the day. Also, some bull spreading noted in the soybean pit today. March soybean meal, a high of 159, a low of 155, settling 158.90, up 340. May, a high of 157.90, a low of 155.50, settling 157.70, up 180. March soybean oil, a high of 1980, a low of 1952, settling 1956, down 5. May, a high of 1990, a low of 1963, settling 1964, down 10 on the day. Settlement prices are also in on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, where for producer Celeste, it was a pretty rough day if you were in that lean hog pit.
Yeah, it looks like we've got a lot of minus signs here today, and the lean hog's down significantly. Let's start with feeders. January feeder cattle, 106.40 the high, 105.80 the low, 106.20 the settlement, that down a nickel. March, 101.40 the high, $100.25 the low, the settlement $100.82.5, that down 10. April, $100.30 the high, $99.40 the low, $100.25 the settlement, that finishing up 25. February live cattle, 89.65 the high, 88.85 the low, 89.52.5 the settlement, that up 17.5. April, 88.20 the high, The low 87.52 and a half, the settlement 87.97 and a half, that up 2.5 cents. February lean hog 75 even, the high, the low 73.87 and a half, the settlement 74.35, that down 142 and a half. April 76.95, the high 75.45, the low 75.62 and a half, the settlement, that down 180. May lean hogs 76.50, the high 75.50, the low 76.07 and a half, the settlement, that down 102 and a half. June 78.90, the high 77.25, the low, finishing at 77.97 and a half, that down 125. And February pork bellies, let's find out what happened there today. 94.55, the high 92.65, the low, the settlement 93.72 and a half, that down 20. The Dow is off 37 points at 10,503. The NASDAQ off 16 at 2058. The S&P 500 down 5 points at 1179.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's time once again to Ask Dr. Science. So let's ask Dr. Science.
That's me.
Remember, he knows more than you do.
That's right.
Jock Rader from Hortons Bay, Michigan writes, "Dear Dr. Science, at our local university, inquiries regarding academic programs are sent to the chair of a specific department. When I receive a memo, it is always from some desk. Does the desk work for the chair? Does the chair know what the desk is doing?"
Never. Bitterness and bad blood between them prompted desks and chairs to make a vow of silence that has lasted from the 16th century until now. In 1511, Adolphus Frohwine created the first office desk. It aroused widespread praise from the burgeoning office supply industry. Those chairs became jealous and maintain a stony silence when in the presence of a desk. It's a well-known fact that two chairs left alone will creak and groan up a storm, but put a desk in the room and you've got yourself a one quiet room. Frohwine profited greatly from his invention, but he was electrocuted a few years later when he tried to create a fax machine that used vinegar, baking soda, and lightning.
Thank you, Dr. Science. Send your science questions to Ask Dr. Science. Remember, he's not a real doctor.
I have a master's degree
in science.
Produced by Duck's Breath and distributed by PRI Public Radio International.
It's 2 minutes before 2 o'clock Central Time. This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana, the broadcasting service of the College of Communications at the University of Illinois. Jason Croft is our technical director today, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. My name is Celeste Quinn. Later this afternoon, coming up following the closing market report, I'll talk about music and the internet with Andy Breeding. He's a research librarian and author of a book about using online music services. It is titled The Music Internet Untangled. We'll talk with Andy Breeding following the closing market report this afternoon. Let's take a look now at Ed Kieser's forecast for Illinois and Indiana. It is topped by a winter storm watch in effect for portions of northwestern Illinois for tomorrow afternoon, Friday afternoon into Saturday morning, and for most of northern Indiana Friday night and Saturday. This afternoon,